Good morning, everybody. It's good to see you all. Yes, I know it was probably quite amusing watching Rachel adjust my headset. I saw you guys pointing and laughing at me. It's fine. I want to thank you all for coming. Happy Easter. We have so many guests today, family, friends, probably people who are passing through. We are glad you are here. If there's anything we could do for you, please let us know, and we will do our best that we can to help you. We want to welcome you to being part of our family, at least if only for today. Thank you for choosing to worship with us this morning. If you are a visitor, I'm afraid that this next part probably isn't going to make a lot of sense to you, because it exactly picks up where I left off. Helps if I turn the thing on. It picks up exactly where I left off last week. This was the very last slide I gave last week with the message of, it was a good week, what could possibly go wrong? Isn't that something you all feel like? You go into something expecting one thing to be exactly the way you expect it to be, and when, by the time it is over, you're like, well, that did not turn out the way I hoped it would. And in this case, I think it's probably even more devastatingly so. The disciples, we talked about how ready they were going into last week. They were ready for everything that was going to happen. They were going to be soldiers. They had their weapons. They had their swords. They showed them to Jesus. They were probably going to fight the Romans and even the Jewish leaders. Jesus himself said, you are going to be leaders among the nations. There are 12 of you. There are 12 tribes. You will rule over those 12 tribes. Jesus enters the city like a king, but humbly, on a donkey. He was going to drain the swamp, kick out the money changers, stop the wrongs, fix the rights. Everything was perfect. What could possibly go wrong in this good week? Turns out, wasn't such a good week after all. It was quite obviously a bad week. And you get to this point where when you approach the bad week where everything seems to be wrong and all hope is lost. Now you have to imagine at some point during this week, every single disciple, every single follower of Jesus felt that all hope was lost. And given if it wasn't for the events of the next week, all hope would be lost. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. So let's go into our calendar. Thursday, April 2nd, 33 CE, Common Era. Like I said, this is just the date we're sticking to because it's the one that's the most accepted. What happens on Thursday? Well, it starts with a dinner, right? Because there was evening in the morning. So the day always starts in the evening, as we see outlined in Genesis. Now, they were celebrating a dinner. What dinner were they celebrating? Passover dinner, because this is the most important day of Passover. They got the empty room. They were there. And so while they're there, Jesus gives them a final gift. At first, he does something which I imagine if I was one of the disciples would have been very, very strange. Now, the foot washing really isn't strange at all. It was probably very, very common in that custom. When you would enter a house, normally a servant or the master of the house would wash your feet. But it was never the most honored guest. Out of everyone in that room that should have washed their feet, only one of them shouldn't have. And it was the one person who did. But did it? He must. Because he was going to lead by example. If you want to be first, you've got to be last. If you want to be a leader, you have to be a servant. And that's who Jesus was. Not to be served, but to serve. And so while you're there, he also gives them another gift. But really not a new gift, but really wrapped up in a new way. And that is a new commandment, which is really just an old commandment, to love one another. This idea that you are going to continue to serve one another, and you're going to serve one another in love. That sounds familiar. Maybe we should use that. But also he does something new, and probably something that would have been also very, very strange to them. He gives them the Lord's Supper. He takes the bread, and he takes the wine, and he blesses it and breaks it and passes it out and says, "This is my body, this is my blood, and you will take this till the day that I come. You're going to proclaim my death. And you're going to pass that down so thousands of years, people in places you've never heard of will be doing the exact same thing all around the world. What we just did, which people have been doing for many, many hours today, they've been proclaiming his death all around the world. From Japan to China to Turkey to Istanbul, probably the same place, I think. Spain, the United States, all over the world, proclaiming his death. But you know, the disciples, they thought they were ready for all this. But it turns out, they really weren't. They were not ready. Yes, we are shocked, aren't we? And Peter says, I hear what you're saying, Lord, but you know, that's not me. I am certainly not going to do these things that you're saying. You know what, Peter? Not only that you are going to do these things, but you're going to take it a step farther. When confronted with the fact that you did these things, you're going to deny me. Peter didn't like that. No, he thought he was ready. And Jesus is here telling them, he is not ready. You disciples are not ready. I've been trying to get you ready for these events, and you're still not ready. But time is running out. And so Jesus goes for a final prayer. You know, there are probably books and papers and many, many things written about this one particular event. Because there's one line in here that Jesus says that really troubles me as a Christian. And that is, my heart was full of sorrow. What kind of state does our God have to be in to have his heart full of sorrow? Because he knew exactly what he's going to happen. What was going to happen. And so he gets the people that probably know him best. And he says, I want you to share this moment for me. I want you to be with me while I pray. And he's going to pray three times that maybe that not only this event passed, but more importantly, that God's will takes place. And what happens? The disciples were not ready. Again, they were not ready. What did they do? Well, it's pretty late. I think I'll take a nap. Hey, bums, wake up. I told you to stay awake. They just were not ready because they did not know. You know, a few, I think Luke and Matthew both record this particular event. I think this must have been very, very hard looking back on this event in hindsight to write this. Because to write this event down shows a ton of humility. It shows that they know that in this moment they regretted falling asleep. Because they were not ready. And they fell asleep at least twice. And the third time he didn't even bother waking them up. Until the time had come where Jesus, there's a final attempt. This is a final attempt in more ways than one. The first one is, it is the final attempt to capture Jesus. But it is also the final attempt that Jesus has the opportunity to get away. Could he have gotten away? Of course. But he knew that this event had to happen. The people came to arrest him in the dead of night. How shameful. He had been there in the temples all the time where they could publicly see them. So Peter, sensing that something needed to happen, took his sword and cut off the servant of the high priest's ear. And Jesus is like, no, there's no more time for that. And so he heals him, rebukes the crowd, and he's arrested and taken away. And we see again that the disciples were not ready. They thought they were ready, but when it came time for them to bring arms, their leader, their master, stopped them. And probably seeing no other choice, they took the only option that they perceived to have left, which is to run away. But it really didn't matter. I mean, maybe there was some attempt to capture them. Mark talks a little bit about someone being captured. But they had their prize. They had Jesus. They had the person that they had come for. And so, moving in from Thursday to Friday, it is officially a bad week. April 3rd, 33 CE. Jesus is now in trials and trials. This is an interesting word because it has two meanings here, both of which are acceptable in the events that are going to take place. The first one is the actual trials that he's going to be in, where people are going to pass judgment on him. And the second ones are the tribulations or trials he's going to endure during these trials. Now, this is actually quite extensive, and if you have a chance, I encourage you to read about these trials. But there are two sets of trials, and the first set are the Jewish trials. The first one before Annas, who is the one that expedites Jesus' death. He's the one that's going to push for Jesus being killed today. And so he sends him to Caiaphas, who's the high priest at this time, and probably part of the Sanhedrin, where he is finally pronounced judgment on by the whole Sanhedrin. Now it's very, very clear from someone reading these trials that this is what you would call a kangaroo court. It was never a fair fight. Jesus was always going to lose this trial, and they made sure of it. They brought false witnesses against him. Until finally, someone said something that was close enough to the truth that they were able to use it as evidence. But during all this, they bound him. They struck him. They mocked him. While he mostly sat in silence to endure this kangaroo court. And again, the disciples are not ready. Perhaps Peter thought that there was another attempt that could be made. Perhaps he thought maybe he could do something. So he sneaks into the court and he hides himself. Probably not very well because people recognize him. Hey, aren't you that guy that was with Jesus? No, that wasn't me. You must be thinking of somebody else. You know, I'm sure that you were with that guy. No, really, it wasn't me. Wait, no, I am positive you were with that guy. I swear to you that that wasn't me. And then the rooster crows, and then Peter remembers, and he knows that he did the one thing that he said only hours before he was swore he was not going to do because he was not ready. And so the trials continue. They want to kill him. Perhaps there's even thought that they were going to kill them, but they needed permission to kill him. They were pretty much able to run themselves, but the one thing that they could not do was they could not execute a criminal. They needed permission from the Romans. So they sent him to Pilate. Well, Pilate talked to him, didn't really think he was guilty. Oh, you belong to Herod? I'm going to let Herod handle that. Herod had been curious. I've heard about this Jesus person. Tell me more. I want to see you. Do some of the things I've heard about. No? Well, okay, fine. Go back to Pilate. And Pilate, again, I do not find this man guilty. But Pilate had a problem. Because Pilate didn't care if the man was guilty or not. Pilate cared if there was going to be a riot. And he could sense that there was going to be a riot. So he tried to appease them. He has Jesus mocked and beaten and scorned. And not what we call the 40 minus 1. Jewish tradition states that if you had to beat or whip a person, you could only give them 40 lashes. So they always did 40 minus 1 in case they miscounted. But the Romans had no rule. Jesus' body was all but broken in the events leading up to this. And finding that he could not appease the crowd, Pilate washes his hands and probably what I think of a very Macbethian manner and says, fine, do with him what you want. It is no longer my problem. This moment has been portrayed a lot in movies. It's one of the reasons I cannot watch The Passion of the Christ. It's just too difficult. And as a Christian, I feel like I think about this moment a lot. I think about what it must have been like to be in this crowd of thousands of people to watch this man, very, very barely a human at this point because of how badly he's been beating, forced to carry a very 50 to 100 pound wooden stake up a hill to be killed, to be nailed to that stake and left to die. I think about that sound, which makes me think it must have sounded something like nails on a chalkboard. What must that sound like? Where he took three nails, quite different from this, probably much, much larger, because remember, that has to go through wood, it has to go through bone, cartilage, flesh, and you have to do it while a man would have resisted you at the exact same time. What that sound must have sounded like when you took the hammer and nailed it into the wood. Apparently this nail's not going to go in. And maybe you missed it two times and you hit him while he screams. Then you do the other one. More of the same. And then the feet, both feet, together. The thing about the cross, it's very much designed to be a slow and painful death. See, it's not hanging on the cross that kills you. It's you not being able to breathe that kills you. Because when your body is hanging, you cannot lift up your diaphragm to breathe. Which is why in the end, to hurry along the process, they broke their legs. So they would die faster. It was designed to be a spectacle. And that's exactly what it was. Was Jesus ready? This line, Jesus says, while hanging on the cross, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, my God, why have you forsaken me? Was he ready? I mean, Jesus obviously knows what's going on. Matthew, who's writing this, obviously knows what's going on. So why does Jesus say this line? Not for his own benefit, but for the people. He was forsaken for them. All of this was given for them. And what lasted 3 hours but was over very, very quickly. Jesus says, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And that was Friday. The day of preparation. Because the next day was Saturday. The aftermath says a lot of things happened after Jesus died. It says the curtain was torn in two, there was an earthquake, rocks split, the tombs were opened, the saints were raised, and the Roman centurion says, truly, this is the Son of God. He saw it. Why didn't the people see it? Because they had to see the death. So we move into Saturday. Keep jumping ahead. Sorry. The reality is when we think about who we are as Christians, this day, this event, coupled with the next event, means more to us than anything else in our walk with Christ. We died just like He died. We have new life just like He was raised from the dead. And we are commanded as Christians to stop sinning. And Roy Bolts, I think it's pronounced, said in his song, does he still feel the nails every time I fail? Does he have to relive this event every time I screw up because I can't be better? I hope not. I really don't. Because I can't bear ever having to see this. And this is thousands of years after the event. So Saturday. What could Saturday possibly look like? I imagine this looks like this. This is the only way I can describe that Saturday. Because all hope is lost. When the disciples sat there doing whatever they had to do that Saturday, probably in hiding, this could be the only way to describe their feelings. The Bible doesn't mention their feelings. But you had to know this is how they felt. Because this is how anyone would feel if they lived that life. But luckily, Sunday shows us something very, very important. And to borrow a popular cliche, the night is always darkest just before the dawn. Because something happened the next day. The new week. Something happened. The women went to the tomb to do the job that they didn't have time to do Friday, to prepare it. And they found something there. Or really, they didn't find something there. And in that moment, we see that faith is renewed, hope is given, and fear is cast aside. Because when they found it empty, at some point, it was no longer empty. But they found Jesus, who told them to fear not. You have no reason to be afraid. Go and tell my brothers. And when I read these words, I think of the words that the angel says in Luke to the shepherds, fear not, for I bring you good news and great joy. Because love never failed. It was still there. It just needed these events to happen. And this is the wonder of this day, this new week. Because it really is a good week. And better than that, it's a good rest of eternity. Because we have the resurrection. Or as what he says, the angel says to the women, why do you seek the living among the dead? He is not here. He is risen. Glory to God in the highest. Amen. Amen. He is risen. So are you ready? Are you ready? That He is risen. The disciples had a long time to figure this out. And they're going to go through their lives and we're going to read their stories. And they're still going to make mistakes. But they're not going to make these mistakes anymore. Because they are ready. And in the same way, I hope you are ready for Jesus. Because the tomb is empty. If there's anything we could do for you, you feel you need to respond to this message, please come forward as we stand and sing this song.